World News Today, brought to you by Admiral Corporation, world's largest manufacturer of radio phonographs with automatic record changers. This program is presented in behalf of Admiral dealers all over America. By shortwave broadcast, direct from news centers in our own country, CBS reporters are waiting to bring you first-hand news from the world's political and battlefronts. Now, here's Bob Trout.
On the eastern bank of the Rhine, north of the Ruhr, the 21st Army Group has linked all its bridgeheads. The British and American ground and airborne troops now hold one solid bridgehead some 30 miles long and about 7 miles deep. German resistance, which has been heaviest on the northern end where the British are fighting, is now stiffening generally, and the Allies are pouring men and material across the river in preparation for the decisive battle. So far, 8,000 German prisoners have been taken by the 21st Army Group. The weather is not so good as yesterday, but both British and American heavy bombers are flying nevertheless. It's just been reported from the American 1st Army front farther south that the 1st has launched an attack out of the Remagen bridgehead. Russian troops are advancing on a wide front through western Hungary on their way to Austria. Washington reports that 3 B-29s were lost in yesterday's low-level attack on Japan's aircraft factories at Nagoya, but the bombing results were described as good. And now for our first report from overseas, Admiral takes you to Supreme Headquarters, Charles Collingwood reporting.
The bridgeheads of the American 9th Army and the British 2nd Army have linked up and mushroomed out until they form a single bridgehead 30 miles long and up to 7 miles deep, almost as big as the Remagen bridgehead. During yesterday, they took 8,000 prisoners. The resistance is getting stiffer, but so far there is no sign that the Germans have been able to get their reserves to the scene, and no large-scale counterattacks have been made. The bridgehead is steadily being expanded, but it's emphasized here at Schaaf that the next few days will be spent building up our forces east of the Rhine, and that the spectacular advances won't come until after the build-up is finished. While British and American troops were crossing the Rhine north of the Ruhr, the last German resistance west of the Rhine collapsed under the pressure of the 3rd and 7th Armies. The Germans suddenly began to pull out yesterday, crossing the Rhine on homemade rafts and anything they could lay their hands on, and by day's end there was only a small pocket left west of Karlsruhe. The 3rd Army's bridgehead south of Mainz is growing swiftly. Yesterday they took 9 towns and got to within 3 miles of Darmstadt. They counted a record number of prisoners, 18,818, although some of those were actually taken yesterday and earlier. The 1st Army's Remagen bridgehead spread out up to 3 miles in the south, but in the north, they sustained their first major counterattack, which was launched at 6:20 this morning and has been going on all day. In spite of the counterattack, the 1st Army took 1,600 prisoners yesterday. Two things which stand out from today's fighting are the slowness with which the Germans are reacting. The only place they have counterattacked is in the two-week-old Remagen bridgehead, and the speed with which they are surrendering. We counted 20,000 prisoners yesterday. The Germans are acting like a tired, confused army which knows it is beaten. This is Charles Collingwood in Paris, returning you to Admiral Radio in New York.
And now for a direct report from our correspondent at the American 9th Army front, Admiral takes you to Germany, Eric Severide reporting.
This is 9th Army. Events are moving well ahead of information, but here is the situation at last report. All units across the Rhine have linked up, making one long unbroken bridgehead, which stretches by river length 25 to 30 miles. In places, it is 8 miles or more deep, and most units are moving ahead at good pace. Several bridges are finished in the British and 9th Army areas. There will be more to come. As the Germans well know, we have been getting tanks across, and there will be more. The Germans have thrown all the mortar fire they could on the bridges and tanks. There's been no serious holdup anywhere. Against one bridge, they tried floating a log carrying explosives, and shore fire set it off. In general, the German resistance has been, in the official army jargon, light to moderate. It was stiffest in the northern part of the British sector, with many mortars and much small arms fire. On the southern extremity, we caught some tank fire. Otherwise, our men have encountered no tanks at all so far. There was one German counterattack at Mir in the north sector, but it was beaten away. German air power is absent. The We encountered a handful of fighters yesterday and another handful last night, and that was all. Remember, the Ninth Army has crossed the Rhine only on a part of its river front. Just south of our bridgehead, the Germans are now frantically digging in on their bank and wearing it. Obviously, they expect more crossings at any moment. Back of the German front, some of their units are on the move. Our plane caught one train loaded with tanks near Munster, moving southwest. But there is no sign of any big general German movement from the interior, and it is probably as honest as it is optimistic to say that they simply have not got the stuff. Except for spots of hard resistance, the only thing which is determining the speed of our advance to the east is our own requirements for supplies and reorganization. The initiative is completely ours. We are the masters of our own fate and of the Germans. This is Eric Severide in Germany, and now back to Admiral in New York.
Before we hear of the new First Army offensive, here is Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral.
The factories of Admiral Corporation fly the coveted Army-Navy E flag, awarded for excellence in war production. Every Admiral employee is proud of Admiral's war production record, and well he may be, for Admiral employees have made possible the company's tremendous output of vital equipment. Many letters are received from former Admiral employees now serving their country in the armed forces, bearing out the high quality of Admiral products in actual combat. Here's a portion of a letter from a private first class somewhere in Italy.
I've come in contact with a lot of Admiral equipment here in Italy, and I'm proud to say my buddies built it. Our radio operator says Admiral equipment can't be beat and holds up swell. Keep up the good work, Admiralites.
And we can all echo that. Keep up the good work, Admiralites. You may be sure, too, that the new high standards of precision in the manufacture of Admiral equipment for combat duty will be maintained in building your post-war Admiral radio, America's smart set. Now here once again is Bob Trott.
The American First Army has opened its new offensive on the Rhine east of Remagen. For a direct report from this sector, Admiral takes you to the American First Army, Winston Burdett reporting.
The First Army has struck eastward in a powerful attack from its bridgehead beyond the Rhine. Since early this morning, our infantry has been attacking along the whole eastern rim of the bridgehead front. All morning and all afternoon, our armored task forces have been grinding east over the dust roads, digging into the German defense, trying to hit a weak spot, and crash out beyond what we believe to be the very thin enemy line ahead of us. The attack is going well. We are meeting uneven resistance. It's been very tough for some of our infantry up in the north, which has beaten off counterattack after counterattack in one small sector. But the main fact about this First Army drive is that it is spearheaded by armor. General Hodges' most powerful, tough, and experienced armored forces are today hitting east, and the opposition in front of them is only moderate. The general of one division told me this afternoon that he hopes to shake that opposition loose before many hours and then start rolling. The tanks began passing through the infantry at 4 o'clock this morning. They met mortars, anti-tank fire, loads of mines, blown bridges, and some German tanks. But they kept going. Our biggest reported gain by mid-afternoon was 6.5 miles. An armored force struck out for the last 5 miles of that advance to reach the town of Flammersfeld. The tanks are bypassing a fight when they can and letting the infantry clean up after them. I followed one of our spearheads this afternoon as far as a village called Asbach. We were held up there for an hour or so by 4 German tanks. Houses were still burning in Asbach from the tank fire, but the fight was over. German civilians stood in their doorway to watch a company of Shermans roar through to their next objective. Over the dust-blown roads, while our armor thundered ahead, German prisoners came tramping the other way, a motley and miserable lot in bunches of 40 and 60. The Germans had concentrated most of their strength up at the north end of the front. They apparently thought that we would try to head that way. But the direction of this drive is due east toward the heart of Germany, and we have plenty of strength to carry through and keep going a long way once the German crust is shattered and the race begins. This is Winston Burdett with the First Army in Germany, returning you now to CBS in New York.
Next, for an interview with a Memphis flyer who helped prepare the way for the ground forces, Admiral takes you to CBS Paris, Bill Downs reporting.
The new bridgehead across the Rhine is old news today. It's no longer news that we have a bridgehead at Wesel, a bridgehead that may be the real beginning of a road to Berlin. Yesterday was our day, the crossing of the Rhine by assault. For the air forces, our day was last Wednesday, 3 days before the troops crossed. With me tonight is Captain Tom de Graffenried, air medal with 16 clusters, DFC and Silver Star. He's from Memphis, Tennessee, and we flew over the Wesel Bridgehead for an hour yesterday in a piggyback Thunderbolt.
I've been flying over Europe for the past 11 months, invasion and everything, but yesterday's show is about the biggest I've seen.
And I've spent 3 days with your outfit, Tom, the 373rd Fighter Bomber Group. I got the idea that this R day was just another day for them and for you.
Well, yes, it sure was. We started operations 2 or 3 days ago. We didn't know exactly why, but the Germans seemed to know that something was up. They've really been pouring stuff into northwest Germany for the past week or so.
Then you think that they suspected that something was up?
I'm sure they did. We found planes sitting out on runways on a number of airfields like fish in a barrel.
And in 3 days, you fellows got almost 200 planes on the ground. Is that right?
I think it was more like 180, but there wasn't any air opposition on this thing, was there?
No, thank God, no.
We had our orders. We went down and shot anything that moved in the invasion area. That's about all.
What do you mean? Anything that moved?
Well, it got so that a German soldier couldn't go to the latrine without some of the fighter bomber boys seeing him. Anything that moved was good targets for us.
But that's yesterday's story. What's ahead of our troops in this new bridgehead? What's that country look like?
Well, it looks like good fighting country, inland. We've been flying over this territory beyond the Rhine for the past 2 months, and there hasn't been a sign of life other than rail and a few MTs. We should be okay when we break through.
What does the country look like exactly?
Well, a little like Nebraska or maybe like central Illinois.
And what about the Ruhr Valley?
I think the Ruhr has had it. It's been beat up by mediums and heavies and artillery, and it's more or less a valley of skeletons, but these skeletons may turn out to be a strong fighting points in the end.
Well, it's not up to us to anticipate trouble. As a matter of fact, it's been the Germans who've had the trouble, and it's guys like you that's been giving it to them for the past couple of years. And incidentally, Captain Tom de Graffenried finished his tour of duty day before yesterday. The Army owes him overtime because he finished his tour of duty the day before our day. He missed trip, but cuff. He's due to go back home in a week or so. And this is Bill Downs returning you to Admiral.
London has some observations for us on the battle in the West. For a report from a CBS correspondent, Admiral takes you to London, Larry Lesser reporting.
The weather broke today. It was rainy and cloudy over the Straits of Dover for the first time after days of brilliant sunshine. The only officially reported air activity from this country today has been 250 Liberators attacking German underground oil stores and British heavies over the Ruhr. But although there can be nothing like yesterday's air umbrella over the Rhine, the news from the bridgeheads is still good. The Allied bridgehead is now some 30 miles long and between 8 and 9 miles deep in places. The British and American armies have linked up, and despite the cloudy weather, our paratroops should have no resupply by air problem because the ground forces have joined firmly with them. It's obvious that Montgomery is trying to seize wide fields of maneuver for his immense tank forces. But although we have two light bridges across the Northern Rhine, we'll have to build many more before he can get rolling. This may take some 10 to 12 days, but the decisive battles will probably take place on the Westphalian plain itself, because for political reasons, the Nazis must try to delay us from reaching the heart of Germany. German morale and economic conditions could never stand up under another reverse deep in the Reich. Some British commentators figure our buildup will take a week or more, with a big battle to be fought not far from the Ruhr. Already German resistance is stiffening, and reinforcements have been brought up to meet the bridgeheads. But Kesselring has not yet committed the 35 divisions under his new command. As usual, the Germans pulled back their major forces from the direct line of our pre-invasion artillery barrage. But Kesselring may strike soon, especially if the weather goes against our air forces. But already the 1st Army's bridgehead at Remagen is paying dividends. The Germans report that General Hodge's troops went over to the offensive today, obviously to divert Kesselring's heavily taxed forces. And the Germans report a new Rhine crossing in General Patton's sector at Boppard, south of Koblenz. This crossing, as yet unconfirmed by Allied sources, will give us 7 distinct bridgeheads over the Rhine on a 400-mile front. It will be a race between the Allied armies to see who first shakes hands with the Russians. And this is Larry Lesser returning you now to Admiral in New York.
For a report on how Washington feels about the new operations in Germany, Admiral takes you to CBS Washington, Tris Coffin reporting.
This is a quiet, lovely spring afternoon in Washington, outwardly remote and far from war. But on this Sabbath day, the churches were crowded. There was one universal prayer. May the war in Europe soon be over. The big push on the Western Front has made a subtle change in Washington. Many doubts are now resolved. The manpower bill can go ahead. Allocations of food and machinery and guns can now be more carefully defined. Next week, Mobilization Director Burns will issue another report. It will forecast the shape of things to come here at home. There is no responsible official who dares predict how long the battle for Germany will last. But there is both an atmosphere of optimism and hope and a realization that hard days are still ahead. One official who sees the secret cables on Germany and who lived there himself sums up the Reich this way. The mass of Germans are apathetic and stunned. There is no longer any mass fanaticism or will to die. Most Germans are stupidly awaiting the end. The German peace feelers are despairing and fantastically unreal. We cannot give them any serious consideration. The Foreign Economic Administration says the Reich is no longer capable of supporting a great army in combat for a long period. Nazi industrial capacity has been cut in two in the year. Transport is in a mess. But industry in Bohemia and Bavaria can support large-scale guerrilla operations for some time. I return you to Bob Trout and Admiral Radio in New York.
We have a dispatch from Greece today which tells us that all Athens turned out in cheerful crowds to watch ceremonies marking the 124th anniversary of Greek independence. The regent of Greece, Archbishop Damaskinos, and Lieutenant General Scobie, along with members of the diplomatic corps, reviewed a 2-hour-long parade of Greece's renewed military strength. It was the first full-fledged celebration in Athens in 5 years, and one newspaper marked the occasion with a front-page picture dated 2 years ago, which showed German mounted police scattering crowds which had gathered for the anniversary. And now for a story from the Pacific. A recorded interview with a reconnaissance pilot from New York City who's made many trips over Japan. Admiral takes you to CBS San Francisco, Webley Edwards reporting.
Fleet Admiral C.W. Nimitz today disclosed in a communique that serious fighting had taken place in Japanese home waters between aircraft of the 5th Fleet carrier planes and Japanese planes based on Kyushu, Shikoku, and Honshu Islands, with large numbers of enemy planes shot down. In one encounter, 50 enemy planes went down with a loss of 3 of our fighters. On Friday and Saturday, the Pacific Fleet shelled with heavy guns objectives in the Ryukyu Islands. We hear a great deal about the great feats of 21st Bomber Command B-29 super fortresses that are bombing the vitals out of Japan's industries and leading cities. But we hear about a lot of the men who are in the advanced guard of these bombing missions. The photographers who go in, take pictures, and tell the bombers it's all right to come on in. With me here at Guam is a man fresh from Japan, photographer gunner Staff Sergeant Herbert P. Bisoff of 310 West 99th Street, New York City. Sergeant, what about this deal?
Well, from here on, this is known as big gear stuff and strictly a snow job.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Ordinarily, we don't go in much for publicity. I'm afraid the boys will dub me as a big gear from now on.
Well, how many times have you been over Japan?
I've been on 8 missions and 1 aboard.
Well, how do you mean that?
That's 8 missions over Japan and 1 that had to turn back.
Well, have you been in this same plane on all these trips?
First 7, I was on the Yokohama Yo-Yo. But the last one I was on is a new ship that we haven't named yet.
Well, I've seen the Yokohama Yo-Yo a lot. So have you any idea what you're going to call this new plane of yours?
No, we haven't. In fact, we're trying to think of a name for it right now. If anybody back in the States has any ideas about what to call this new plane, we'd be glad to have some suggestions.
Well, you better look out. You're inviting a couple of tons of V-mail.
Well, all right. We got to have a name for this plane, haven't we?
Yeah.
Well, now, you fellow, what about, tell us about these photographic missions of yours over Japan.
Well, before our men go in on their bombing runs, they have to know what they're going to hit. So we go in ahead of them and take pictures. Then, after they have burned the places, we go back again to see how much damage they have done.
Well, isn't this kind of dangerous?
Well, not too dangerous most of the time.
One time, one of our planes,
Sergeant Tim Terry's ship, got jumped by 70 Jap ships. It made them kind of nervous.
You mean one B-29 plane was attacked by 70 Jap fighter planes?
That's right, and they came back to tell about it. But lately, we don't get so many fighters. The flak is still coming up at us, though, and rather heavy.
Well, have you ever heard about how many up after you?
No, we haven't. The most we've had after us were three or four. But an interesting thing we did have, a German plane after us over Japan.
It was a black plane with white crosses, just like you see in the movies from Europe.
I know I'm not mistaken about that because one of the others and the navigator saw it. We were in the sun at the time, and he couldn't see us, so we didn't tangle with him. Well, we were kind of surprised to see a German plane over Japan.
Do you think it was a German flying it?
Maybe it was. I guess maybe they have some Germans over there teaching the Japs some fighter tactics. I gave him a couple of bursts, but I didn't happen to hit him.
What does it look like going into Japan?
The first thing we see above the horizon is Mount Fujiyama. This time of the year, she's covered with snow. In fact, most of the island of Honshu is pretty snowy at this time of the year.
Did you get cold?
No, because we're in a pressurized cabin. In fact, we sweat it out when we get down Black Alley from Nagoya to Yokohama.
The worst thing is when we hear over the intercom
the gunners calling out flak burst news. Makes us feel like ducks in a shooting alley.
Have you ever been shot up?
No, it just so happens we haven't had a hole in the plane.
I don't blame you for knocking on wood, boy.
Well, we're not superstitious. We just don't take chances. And right here, I want to say a word about the ground crews.
Those guys are wonderful. They do as much sweating as we do.
Well, I'm kind of fond of them myself. Thank you and good luck to you, B-29 photo gunner, Staff Sergeant Herbert P. Bysoff. And I hope your mother back there at West 99th Street in New York City is listening to you. I know you're in good health, and I hope you get a new name for that Tokyo-bound B-29 of yours. This is Webley Edwards at Guam. I return you to Admiral Radio in New York.
The news from Moscow is the Red Army is still concentrating on both ends of the curving eastern front, cleaning up the German pockets along the Baltic Sea and smashing ahead on both sides of Czechoslovakia in German Silesia and also south of Czechoslovakia on the road to Vienna. And now you're going to hear about a new kind of refrigerator that won't require covered dishes to keep foods fresh and appetizing. Here's Warren Sweeney.
It's the Admiral Dual Temp, the refrigerator that is really two refrigerators in one. And it's true. You won't have to use covered dishes because of Dual Temp's huge, purified, moist cold compartment. There are no exposed, frost-collecting coils to draw the moisture and vitamins from your foods in the Admiral Dual Temp. The coils have been built right into the walls of the Admiral refrigerator. 85% humidity is maintained, and so the need for covered dishes is eliminated. And since there are no exposed coils, there is no defrosting. The Admiral Dual Temp is the refrigerator with a built-in home freezer to quick freeze foods or store nearly 2 bushels of frozen foods for months. And ice cubes say you can freeze bushels of them in your Admiral if you wish and store them in dry cold, so dry and so cold that they don't even stick together. Make a date with yourself now to see the Admiral Dual Temp before you buy your next refrigerator. Dual Temp is the successor to the ordinary mechanical refrigerator. And remember, only Admiral can build a Dual Temp. One of America's most urgent manpower needs is for more able seamen, mates, and engineering officers for the Merchant Marine. The supply problem to serve all our overseas forces is almost unbelievable, and only the Merchant Marine can handle it. America has the ships, but she needs the men to man them. If you have the experience needed to serve your country in this emergency, apply at once by wiring Collect Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C. World News Today is brought to you each Sunday at this hour by Admiral Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's Smart Set, and post-war makers of Admiral Dual Temp Refrigerators, Admiral Home Freezers, Admiral Electric Ranges. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Admiral brings you World News Today by shortwave, direct from leading news centers of the world. This is Warren Sweeney speaking coast to coast for Admiral. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.